This podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Thank you very much. You are very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show with me, Alison Spittle. I'm in front of a mic, so I feel like a DJ. This week's guest is Evelyn Mack, who's a fantastic stand-up comedian. She is from Sweden, but I interviewed her in London. She really is a great comedian that I admire a lot, and I'm happy to have her on the show. And I think you'll think she's great, so have a listen here. This is the This is Evelyn Mack.
And this is Alison Spittle. We're good. We're awesome.
So, Evelyn, you're from Sweden.
I am from Sweden.
Have you tried the Swedish fish?
Oh, you mean the Christmas fish?
The Christmas fish? What's that?
Oh, you mean the candy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are they served? I know they're American sweet. I'm just like, do you have them in Sweden?
I've seen them in IKEA in England. I've seen them in IKEA in England, but I've never seen them in Sweden.
Right, okay.
So I don't think I've tried them, but I think they're the same thing as we have Ferrari cars in Sweden.
Right.
And I think they're the same as the fish, but they're just shaped as the Ferrari cars.
That is crazy.
So technically I've tried them.
What is IKEA like in Sweden?
I like how we just jumped into it. This is really great.
I just want to get this shit out of the way. So I can ask you, what it's like being a female comedian? No.
Oh, my God.
No.
Well, I am menstruating right now.
Right now. I know, it sounded like a breakfast toast there. Okay. Where you were like, I am menstruating. I was like, right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get your female comic. IKEA in Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, like IKEA, I'm not even joking, it's my favorite place.
I'd say it's my favorite place too.
I go to just visit sometimes and just eat food.
Nice. Like what when you're in London as well, just
yeah.
That's cute.
Cuz I'm a loser. And
yeah.
I like Sweden. IKEA in Sweden is, I'm going to say, a little bit better.
Okay.
I want to say.
Yeah.
Because the food is better.
What do you mean? Is it like a better quality of meatball? Or what are we talking here?
It's a better quality of hot dogs.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't like the hot dogs in IKEA.
You don't?
But I eat them because they're always available. Do you know when you're leaving and you're my God, I'm so hungry.
Yeah.
I've looked at so many textiles for 4 hours and now I have to just shove something mustardy into my mouth.
Exactly.
And I eat it. But I know it's not good quality.
Like a little trivia for you is that the owner of IKEA, Ingvar Kamprad, he's been like against them raising the price. So it's been like in Sweden, and I guess here it's been like 50p for the longest time because he's like, we're not going to make money off of the hot dog stand. They're making money off of like all the furniture.
Oh.
So when people come out, this is just like a treat that they can have before they leave.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah. So he's refused to raise the prices.
How old is he? Is he like a celebrity in Sweden? Like what's his role in Sweden?
I think he died this year.
Oh,
I don't know. Or he's still alive. I can't remember.
Oh, maybe he goes like in a flat pack coffin.
In a flat pack. They had to assemble his own coffin. Yeah. He's known in Sweden, but he's known to be very humble.
Okay.
And very down to earth, even though he's like this multi-million billionaire.
Yeah.
He still drives like his old Volvo. He still kind of wears like really regular clothes. Lives in the same place where he invented IKEA.
No.
But he also had very much right fascist leanings and supported. He was a Nazi sympathizer.
Oh, that's not cute.
No.
Oh, that's not the trivia I was hoping for.
But we've sort of looked past that, and we keep eating the meatballs.
An elder relative that has like Nazi sympathies.
He's the grandfather of Sweden.
The racist grandfather of Sweden.
And we just let him be.
Yeah. We're like, he can't change his ways now.
No. Sure, he denies the Holocaust, but you know.
Oh my no, Christ. Kidding.
I don't think he denied the Holocaust.
Okay. Wait, libel law.
Yeah, libel law.
He doesn't deny, he didn't deny it happens, but he's not against it.
He's exactly. He sympathizes with the people who made it happen.
Oh my gosh. So what other things are Sweden famous for? I'm trying to think now. ABBA.
ABBA.
And ABBA are reforming. How do you feel about that?
Are they?
They're coming out with new music.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They must need money.
They must have so much money because they wrote the songs and they got the musical and that's still going.
Oh, yeah. And the film, isn't
the
it?
The film, yeah. How do you feel about ABBA as a Swedish person?
I think they're great. They did much for music. They really did. But they had like a weird... I think they had weird relationships within the group.
Yeah, weren't they married?
They were all married to each other.
Oh my
in
Christ.
A weird way. And then they got divorced and the two ladies just stopped doing like things in public. And
right.
then the men just kind of went off and became like millionaires.
That's billionaires. Always the way.
It's always the way. Yeah.
I used to love ABBA. What's your favorite ABBA song? I don't mind now if you're not that into it. You can tell me if you're not that into ABBA. You're not going to be.
I'm so not. I remember when in Sweden they formed something called the A-Teens, okay. which was like the ABBA teens when I was in high school.
I remember them. Did they have a song like Something Off the Ceiling or what was their...
They just did ABBA covers.
ABBA covers?
Yeah. Maybe they did like original music. I can't remember, but they did ABBA covers and it was like an attempt to bring ABBA to like a new generation.
Oh, of course.
It was hilarious.
I do think I remember them. I'm going to Google them. No, I shouldn't. It's the middle of a podcast. It's
not. I can Google them.
Do. I 18s. Think one of them had like blonde hair. Like the man.
Yeah.
Like curtains.
Yeah. And they kind of now just kind of, one of them, like the one of the girls, the blonde girl, she's like pretty famous in Sweden now.
Oh, she's still going. What is she doing?
She is. She's kind of like a presenter.
Oh.
So she's kind of like Holly Willoughby-ish.
Holly, do you know the weird thing about Holly Willoughby?
Uh-huh.
I went to this B&B in Lincolnshire, and it was like, oh, look at this. She's got like green. I'll describe it for the people who are not me. So we got like a man with brown textured hair and the hairs have got so much texture, Evelyn.
Yeah, it's so spiky.
So spiky. And they look like manga characters. They're beautiful.
They do, yeah. So very shiny.
Yeah, they did exist. I could confirm that. But
what are you saying about Holly Willoughby?
Oh, yeah. So I went to this B&B and there's like four bedrooms in this B&B and the guy was showing us around and he goes, oh, you're staying in the Holly Willoughby suite. And I was like, oh, right. And I was like, oh, did Holly Willoughby stay here? Like, I don't know why it's... And he's like, no. And he offered no other explanation. So I'm like, why is this room named after Holly Willoughby?
Like, were there any Holly Willoughby, like...
Paraphernalia?
Photos? Yeah, and paraphernalia?
No, there wasn't. It was very nice. There was
that's
like
a
tea making set. I wonder if that's like Holly Willoughby's traits or whatever.
She's on TV in the morning.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you can wake up in the morning. Yeah. You can watch Holly. Yeah, it
make
was strange.
Tea.
I'm sad I didn't get a proper explanation of him though.
Oh, I feel like it would have been something really creepy. But very, very fun to retell to people.
Yeah.
Probably.
Maybe he's just doing that so he'd know I'd spread the word.
Yeah.
So, when did you leave Sweden? And what's Sweden like?
What's Sweden like?
Yeah, it doesn't describe to me.
That's so funny. That's such a fun... I wonder what Ireland is like. I imagine Ireland and Sweden are quite similar.
I'd say so. Our population is like, I think... Oh, I'll Google it. It's over 4 million and under 6.
Oh, really?
I think, yeah.
Oh, how many? I think we have 10. I think we're on 10 now.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you've got a bigger population than us.
Yeah.
And what? What's did you grow up in rural Sweden or in a town?
I grew up in a town. I grew up in the second largest city.
Okay.
But I will say I mean, I'm going to get a lot of crap maybe, but I will say Sweden only has like one real city. Like
Ireland
one
has that too, yeah.
Proper big city, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that Dublin?
Dublin,
then?
Yeah. And people from Cork will hate me for saying that. But I love it. It's no shade. I'm not giving any shade.
Like, me it's neither. It's just facts.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Yeah.
I go in that according to, I don't know.
has your city ever hosted the Eurovision finals?
Oh my God, have we?
Where are
I
you
think
from?
We have. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm from Gothenburg.
Gothenburg.
And I think they hosted it like within the last 4 years.
Oh yeah, because you won with Euphoria, which is an incredible song.
Yeah, yeah, with Lorraine.
Yeah, like that's the only Eurovision song out lately that I could see as a legit hit.
That's very true. We had Heroes as well by Heroes. A guy, but I don't think he won.
Is he a guy? No, that's the Norwegian guy. Heroes.
Heroes was he actually dated the guy who did that. He actually dated the lady from A-Teens.
Oh my God, they're like Swedish pop royalty.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. But I think we hosted it a few years ago, and I'm from Gothenburg, which is like the second largest city. But I would say honestly, it's like a big small town,
yeah.
Because there's a lot of small town mentality there.
Okay.
And because Gothenburg basically has like a feud with Stockholm, but Stockholm doesn't really know about it.
Oh, so that's so upsetting. So what do people in Gothenburg not like about people in Stockholm?
They think that they're very posh and very up themselves.
Yeah.
And very what's it called? A bit too big for their boots.
I can, we have that in Ireland too.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I think like most places kind of like don't like Dublin because they feel like Dublin people look down upon the rest.
Oh.
Cork have this mentality that they're the best in the world, and I don't disagree with them. Although I'm very far away, I like their confidence. I think it's because they're a small city, and I'm like, it's like I'm never threatened by someone. I'm never threatened by someone that I don't see as a threat that's incredibly confident in themselves. I'm like, good for you. But if someone's confident and they're a bit talented, I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah. You can't have it all.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. That's the truth.
That's so funny.
Yeah, like... There's some people on Instagram and they're like, I'm just modeling what I wear today. And if they're not that stylish, I'm like, go you. Have confidence in yourself. But if they are stylish, I'm like, look at that. Tramp.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like,
showing off again.
You create a troll account so you can troll them.
I used to troll when I was younger.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to go on internet chat rooms. And, did you ever go on internet chat rooms?
I did. I remember that like happened when... We had like we had one computer in our classroom.
This is amazing.
And during the recess, we would all go on the chat room, the Swedish chat room. And it was just pervs there. It was just pervs.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I felt so special.
So funny. Would you troll the pervs then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think in the end, I'm just trolling myself. Because they would be like... They would talk like sexual shit, and I would like talk back in what I deemed sexual.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, by the way, you're talking to a 12-year-old girl. You should be ashamed of yourself. And
that's like, so funny.
Like they're.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Or what? Yeah. I was really bad. I remember in primary school, so that's like when we're about 10 or 11, we just got the internet, and the boys in my school typed into Google. I think it was not even Google. I think it was Ask Jeeves. That's how long ago.
That's very funny.
Yeah. And they typed in wet pussies. But Sorry. We're in a cafe.
That's so funny. No. There is literally a mother with her child in front of us. But I don't think she noticed it at all. I don't think so.
Do you know when you say something bad and then you hear like a fork go down, like it's going silent? But I didn't know what the connotations of that was. And I literally thought they were looking for wet cats. And when my teacher came in and he was going crazy. And
that's
like,
adorable.
I know. Very Catholic. Very
Catholic.
Very kind of wrapped in cotton wool and stuff.
Did you grow up Catholic?
Yeah, I grew up Catholic up until... I'd say I was about 13, and then I stopped.
So you chose to not continue.
Yeah, because in Ireland we have this like, and I say, and this is like a big part of the podcast, and I should stop doing it, but anyone I talk to that's not from Ireland, I'm like, you should hear about our women's slavery thing that we had in the mid-century.
Oh my God, please tell me about this, yes.
Oh, so there's a thing called the Magdalene Laundries, which is a place where... the Catholic Church kind of volunteered to help with mothers that weren't married.
Oh, okay.
And then to pay their way, they would have to do laundry and not get any money. And they couldn't leave. Their family had to sign them out. And their babies were like forcefully adopted and taken away. And like they found bodies in all of these. It's crazy shit. Yeah.
Your bodies.
Yeah. Like 800 baby corpses. Yeah.
So they said that they adopted away the babies, but they actually
sold them to like Americans, but like some of them or Irish people or whatever. But it was a big thing in America if you were American and Catholic and you couldn't have a child, they'd be like, why don't you adopt a lovely Irish Catholic baby? So,
you're kidding. Mm.
Yeah,
oh
so
my
they used
gosh.
To fly over and pick them up. No, those babies were like malnourished. Or, you know, this is what were we talking about before? Yeah. Oh, yeah. What did you grow up with religion in Sweden, actually?
I did. So it's, well, not really, because my dad wasn't of faith, but my mom was spiritual, but she was like, so she picked from everything.
Oh, right.
So my mom's like, so my dad is from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And his dad joined the Catholic Church, actually.
What?
So my dad's name is Francis, and his brother is Luke, and his sister is Maria.
Right.
So my dad's Francis, and so they when they were kids, I think they went, I don't know if they went to church, but my grandfather was very Catholic and religious. So even in Sweden, he would go to church like every Sunday.
Oh, okay.
But he never really like pushed it on to my dad or his siblings. So they grew up sort of without faith.
Right.
I think it was quite personal for my grandfather. And I think he did it also because during that time, the Catholic Church would help people who were a bit poorer, which was my dad's family. But then my mom, she grew up in India.
Okay.
So she's Chinese, but she grew up in a diaspora in India.
Right.
So she kind of had like Hinduism around and Buddhism. And like I remember telling me she grew up in like a neighborhood with all different types of religions.
Right.
So that's probably why she's just taking from everything.
Yeah.
So she believes in like, I think she believes in a God and she believes in spirits and she believes in ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't really practice like a specific religion.
Right. And how did your parents meet?
They met in Sweden.
Okay.
So they moved to Sweden individually when they were 19, both of them.
Yeah.
And then they just, so my dad moved because he had, his uncle was a sailor and on his like trips, he went around the world. And so he liked Sweden.
Yeah.
So he decided to stay in Sweden. And so he opened, I think like the first Japanese restaurant in Sweden, even though we're Chinese.
Nice.
That's how it works.
So it's your uncle, is it, that moved, or your granduncle?
Yeah, my granduncle, yeah.
So your granduncle is like, I love Japanese food and I love Sweden.
Exactly.
Let's get this shit together.
Let's do this.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so he opened it there.
Yeah.
And then he, because my dad dropped out of school when he was like 15. Because he just didn't like studying and stuff. And So he started kind of working in Hong Kong. They have like these barbecue restaurants where they make like the Chinese barbecue meats.
Okay.
So he started working in one of those and kind of trained in one of those. And then he got like a trainee position at a really nice hotel. Mm. So he trained as like a sous chef or something. Like he trained as a proper chef.
Yeah.
And so my uncle or his uncle who moved to Sweden was like, oh, well, do you want to come over to Sweden and help me and work in my restaurant?
Yeah.
Because we could use your knowledge of Asian food. And so he was like, yeah. So he moved to Sweden and started working there. And my mom, she had the offer to go to Sweden after school to work in a different restaurant that was for a friend of my grandmother's. And so she was like, yeah, sure. So she went and worked, and it was the same town. And then it's basically like when you're within the restaurant business, everybody knows each other.
Yeah.
And then they eventually ended up, my mom eventually ended up in my dad's uncle's restaurant, and then they met there and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So they met kind of at work together.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. What was it like? So your mom grew up in India.
She did, yeah.
And what was it like being a part of a diaspora in India? Did she talk about it much?
I think it was tough because they were definitely teased about it in school.
Okay.
But I think it was interesting because there's a huge diaspora of Chinese people in India, especially in Calcutta.
Yeah.
But my mom grew up in Mumbai. Mm. So it was very much like, I quite admire them because they still kept, it becomes very insular because when it is a diaspora, they make sure to enable, like in order to keep your culture alive and to keep like everything that you grew up or are really.
Yeah.
They make it so that you kind of keep it within the culture.
Yeah.
So it's like you tend to marry other Chinese Indian people and, it's like, it's very much, you integrate into the culture, I think, which they definitely did. Mm. Because it's always this thing of like, it's either assimilation or not. Integration is really difficult to achieve.
Right.
And so I think in order to keep their own culture alive, they integrated enough because they all speak Hindi and they know the Indian culture and stuff. But then they also kept up speaking their own dialect from China.
Right.
Which is Hupe. So I speak that as well. So the fact that they've been able to keep that throughout, what is it, three generations in India?
Yeah.
Is quite, I find that quite like admirable of my, like my grandmother and my mom and my great grandparents.
No, that's amazing that you can, you can speak the dialect that what your grandmother speaks.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What language do you speak with your parents?
With my dad, I try to speak Cantonese.
Yeah.
Because my dad's Cantonese. And with my mom, I speak Hupe, which is the dialect she has.
Yeah.
But then I speak Swedish with them as well.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was a kid, they would speak to me in Chinese and I would answer in Swedish, which is kind of a dick move.
Oh, no.
David Kitt, hello, how are you?
It was a bit dramatic, the post maybe, and part of you goes, oh shit, now
you feel like you have to leave now.
Well, there's that, and there's me, and then it's like your mates texting you going, geez, what's going on? Like, can we go for going away pints and all this kind of stuff?
Hello, my name is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore, your weekly music smackdown every Friday on the Headstuff Podcast Network.
So... Yeah. Thank you very much, this cafe. we were talking about. We'll pretend nothing happened.
Yeah. Basically, ran out of battery.
We did.
The cafe helped us.
They're incredible. It's Pritchard and Yore in Camden Garden Centre.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give them a little advert now. They gave me batteries. Thank you very much. very nice people. We were talking about kind of what culture did you feel you had growing up?
Because that's the thing. Like, I bet you maybe felt that as well because you moved around so much. But
yeah,
like I never felt really Swedish, but then I didn't really feel Chinese. So it was like, because I grew up in an area in Sweden that was quite multicultural. So in Sweden, when they needed to accommodate like the huge influx of refugees and like migration that was coming in, they built housing outside of the cities to accommodate it.
Okay.
And so everybody moved in there, but then that led to like natural segregation.
Right.
And so we lived in that area. So it was super multicultural. But the only place where I felt like I had Swedish cultural influences was like at school.
Okay.
So it was very much like at school, it was Swedish culture. At home, it was Chinese culture. And then with my friends, because we were all from different backgrounds, we kind of had invented our own sort of culture.
Okay.
So I feel, and that was very much, I think, influenced by like a very American kind of Fresh Prince and Bel Air, because that's what the media that was on TV and stuff. So I think that was sort of the culture that we had. So that's why I'm super Americanized, because you hear my accent.
Yeah.
And then my dream is to like go to the States and live in the States and blah, 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 blah.
Is it?
But yeah.
That's so cool.
It's a very like...
You made a face there that's like, yeah. Like, yeah. As if like...
It's like my nerdy dream.
Yeah.
But so like, I think that's... So that's why I think we had like a... It's a very much more Americanized culture that I feel more connected to.
Yeah. Have you been to America?
No. So I've been there twice for vacation, but I've never lived there or anything. So it's so strange to feel a connection with a place that you just don't actually... I've never really been in for a long period of time.
I wonder, is like America the default kind of culture then for people to... for people to have, you know? Because some Irish people, like Jedward, have a very kind of like American-y accent.
Do they?
Would you to Irish people, they sound a bit American.
Oh.
And it's because like Nickelodeon and stuff did a lot of heavy lifting, bringing up children, you know?
Yeah, in Sweden it was The Simpsons. We all watched The Simpsons.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
In Ireland, like... We've got this big resurgence of love for old Simpsons.
Yeah.
And we have this special Facebook page called, I think it's Ireland Simpson Memes or something.
That's funny.
Like any kind of news story, you just wonder how it's going to be shown in the Simpson memes. So it's interesting. When you went on vacation, like, are you kind of scoping out the place to live there, or...
I've been, basically, I just went to a bunch of, like, it's mostly comedy related, so I just go to watch the comedy shows, and like Comedy Cellar in New York. I've only been to New York, really, and I was in Miami, because I have family there.
Okay.
But that was just eating. We just ate a bunch of stuff.
Oh, nice. Sorry.
No worries. So we just, so when I've been to New York, I've just kind of gone to like the comedy, like the UCB and Comedy Cellar and stuff, and then kind of looking at New York, because I've been in London for so long.
Yeah,
I don't know if I want to go and live in New York, because it's harsh. Yeah. It's just like I'm so like London is tough to live in.
Yeah.
How do you feel now after a month?
I feel very thankful. I feel very lucky to have like really nice friends, you know, like Deborah Frances White is like, she put on a little dinner for me, like a welcome to Camden. It's just so sweet. And Katrin Bohart and Abigailia and Beck and loads of people have been super lovely. And I was told that it's a very harsh city and you will be lonely. And I think the biggest thing I'm afraid of is being lonely. Oh. That's why I do comedy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think like one of my biggest fears is like dying and no one will remember me.
Oh my.
Because I used to read encyclopedias when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I used to read all the biography sections and you'd have like Winston Churchill is no example now. He's, you know, I know what he did in Kenya.
Yeah.
But back in the day, I was like, I want to be like Queen Elizabeth or Winston Churchill, that even when I'm dead, everyone will remember me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's secretly why I want to do comedy.
That is so...
That's so fucked up.
No, it's so... Oh, it touches my heart.
Yeah, I'm doing this out of fear.
Yeah.
Everything I do is out of fear. That's so funny.
Well, same here. Everything I do is out of fear. That is hilarious.
So I was like, so I was afraid of moving here. And I think I put it off for a long time and I kept going. No, I'm okay where I am because I love Dublin. Like Dublin is like the best city.
I've never been to.
It's beautiful. You should come.
I really want to go and see.
Do
Dublin. Yeah.
It's a great city. There's a great festival called Vodafone Comedy Festival in an incredible place. But I'll tell you after the podcast.
If we just started like swapping it for
the podcast. It's like total comedian talk. But I love Dublin, and what made you take the plunge from Sweden? The thing that convinced me to move from Dublin was I did this gig in Vicar Street, and it was like the biggest gig of my life, and it's the thing I've always wanted to do, and I did it. And then I was sitting there after, and everyone was just drinking and having a good time, and then I was just thinking, what now? And it was like a light switch went off, and it's like, now you have to move.
Wow.
Now you have to move.
That's such an insightful thing to have.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It's amazing. I think I
just kept holding on to the dream of staying in Dublin because I had all these goals. Oh. And I was like,
and well, then you achieved all of them.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, isn't that weird? Yeah, that is.
That's
that sounds so wanky, but that's actually what happened. But that's
because that's such a that's a really like nice trajectory to have, or like you're kind of and the fact that you want to keep challenging yourself.
Yeah, and I never feel like rejected by Dublin. It's not like I'm going like fuck Dublin, because it's actually because I love Dublin so much that I want to make a living.
Yeah.
So I'll go over here to London, but I'll do all my lovely gigs in Dublin. And I love it. And but I'm happy that I'm not bitter at the place.
Yeah.
Because I think you could. I think that's a big thing that can happen. Like, did you start doing comedy in Sweden?
I did.
Now, don't worry. I don't want you to like. It's not like a podcast where I'm like, oh, Evan, just talk shit.
You don't even have to ask me. It'll happen. I started in Sweden, and I had been doing it for 4 years in Sweden.
Yeah.
Before I moved here. And
that's a good chunk. That's learning who you are in comedy in that way.
Yeah, but I think it's taken me a lot of time to kind of learn who I am. I think I'm still maybe. But I think I felt the same. I had nowhere near achieved any of what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
In Sweden. But I think I reached a ceiling where I wasn't in my personal development, where I just didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And I felt like it's such a small scene. Maybe it's similar to Dublin.
Yeah, it's a small scene.
It's like, and when it's a small scene, it's like, it's almost that it's more social than it is constructive at times.
Yeah.
And so at least at that time, that's what I felt. For me personally. And so I just didn't know where to go. And also, I think it was that thing of culturally, I never felt like I fit into Sweden. And comedy and humor, especially stand-up, is so culturally related.
Yeah.
And dependent. So I felt like I just didn't really fit in, and I didn't know how to communicate through comedy in Sweden really or efficiently. And I always wanted to try it in English. So I was like, this is a good time. And also, at the time, I was doing a comedy character.
Really?
So when I started out, I did a comedy character.
What's your comedy? So I met you in Edinburgh years ago, and I saw you do a gig. And you had this kind of like, this presence about you that was like, you did this great joke about your vagina being like a fairground, like a broken fairground, right? I'm not going to butcher it because what was the joke again?
My vagina's like an abandoned fairground. One child dies and no one wants to visit. Is what I said.
It was very good.
An abortion joke.
It's illegal. It's legal now in Ireland.
So it's yay.
But
Oh, I can't believe I just did that.
What was your character like? What was it?
So my character was very much, it's so weird, but it was the opposite of how I am on stage now.
Right.
So it was a really shy, introverted girl.
Yeah.
Just saying the filthiest things.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I've always been. But so I think, and that was probably a reaction because I was so nervous when I started doing stand-up. Like I had stage fright, and I still do sort of have stage fright. So that character just came out naturally and it was just like, and I was like, oh, if I'm nervous on stage, then maybe that's how I should be. And then it just became more intentional rather than unintentional.
Okay.
And so I got like a web series with it in Sweden quite quickly. I think I had been doing stand-up for like 2 years or 3 years or something.
Yeah.
And they, our equivalent of BBC, started like an online sort of comedy website.
Yeah, I did that too in Ireland.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. About 3 years into doing comedy as well.
Was it? Or do they? Is it the BBC? Then?
It's RTE, but it's the equivalent. So it's kind of like TV license payers, public funded.
Exactly.
Kinda,
gave me money to.
Yeah, gave me money. They're like, we got this new online thing.
Yeah.
You're a comedian here.
Yeah, here.
So when you did the web series, was it like what kind of, was it sketches or what were you doing?
It was a narrative, but it was like 5 minutes. And so basically the plot was my character is going to find true love. And so she did like a video blog about her like escapades or learning and stuff. So each episode was like a new way of learning how to attract a man, basically.
Yeah.
And it was not fun because basically I was so young, so I didn't know what I was doing. And I went with a producer that then I ended up just giving away all the power to.
Yeah.
So he wrote it, he directed it. So I just became like an actor in it. Yeah. So it was like, and it sort of broke my heart really.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't do the, because it didn't turn out the way I wanted it.
Yeah.
And so I just couldn't perform in that character anymore on stage.
It's almost like, you had to cut all ties with that. Yeah.
Which is like, it's weird because now that I think of it, it's like one of the saddest like things really, but I didn't really think about it in those terms back then. I just know that I just did not feel good about it.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of, I was like, oh, well, now I guess I need to come up with something else. So I'll try and, I guess I'll just go to England and try and develop there. And then the intention was always to go back, but then it was just fun here.
I'm so happy. I'm so upset that happened to you, but happy at the same time that it made you move.
Yeah.
And like, you've done 2 Edinburgh shows so far. What was it like putting on an Edinburgh show? How long were you living in the UK when you put on your first Edinburgh show?
5 years.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, it's fine then.
How long did, when did you do yours?
Oh, I did, the first ever Edinburgh show I did was so shitty. It was like a big mistake. I basically had written an hour of material over my whole comedy span, and I was like, fuck it, I'll just do this as an Edinburgh show. It was a terrible show. It was like,
that's hilarious.
It was like 4 or 5 years ago. I called it Alison Spittle Needs an Agent, and I was looking for an agent.
That's so funny.
It failed in every one of its aims as like getting an agent or being a comedy show. It was just and I had a documentary crew follow me from an Irish TV station in Ireland, and it's just an hour of like, so they follow 5 other comedians. It's an hour of comedians telling jokes interspersed with me crying.
That is so funny.
Yeah, the end of the documentary, I go, I have not validated myself as a comedian. It was like disastrous. Yeah.
I'm sure it was fine.
Oh, no, it was fine. Yeah. I look at it now and I laugh, but like,
so
I've
funny.
Even got some screenshots of my sad face, which I'll show you after.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Yeah, it is a face of a person that realized that Edinburgh was a very big mistake 2 days into it and just had to keep going.
And had to keep going.
I'd like gigs where I think I don't think I even gigged to 100 people over the whole span of that Edinburgh. Do you know really? What I mean?
Yeah.
I think I cancelled so many days. I had two people in. It was so bad.
Which room were you in?
I was in Just a Tonic in the Mash House.
Okay, yeah.
It was like, oh, Evelyn. I was just like, I was living in Leith as well.
No.
In an airbed in Leith. So Leith is like 15-minute bus ride out of Edinburgh. I was staying on an air mattress behind someone's couch, and I would just, I felt like Harry Potter. I had no personal space. And people would come into the sitting room where I slept drunk, and they would be like, hey, Alison. They'd wake me up, and they just, because I'm a comedian, they're like, do you want to chat? And I'm like, yeah. And they'd always come home with like a Chinese takeaway and feed me chicken balls like a baby bird, just throwing it behind the couch. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll have a chicken ball.
I'll be honest, that part sounds really nice, though.
It was really good. Yeah.
That part sounds good. I would like to be fed.
It was worth it.
That's like, because everybody has like a really bad Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I feel like you got yours out of the way.
Hopefully. Yeah. I had a way better Edinburgh this year than last time. So having a shitty Edinburgh makes me, like, even when I get like 3-star reviews, and I'm like, at least it's not this. Yeah. I'm just like, yeah. What was your first Edinburgh like for you when you did your hour long show? Because when I met you, the first time I ever met you was you and Phil Wang in a doorway. This is like when I did my shitty Edinburgh time.
Okay.
And you were like, are you going to the Dave party? And I was like, what's the Dave party?
Sound like such a cunt.
No, you were not. No, you weren't. You weren't. Because I loved it because you were saying it to me as if I should be going there. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, I'm accepted. These are my peers.
That's so funny.
I think I was like, oh, no, I'm doing something else. It's fine. But, and it was like, I got this one gig, this is like years ago.
Christian Talbot.
Yeah. I was hanging out with him and he was like, I'm going to this show. It's called Comedy Roast Show, but it wasn't like the roasts that we see on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
It was like, you had to do a minute and these two people presented it and they got a little microwavable roast dinner and they would feed it.
Remember Stuart Loss. Oh, yes, yeah. I remember you from that. Yeah.
And they were like, they had, I don't know, they played the Hotel Rwanda theme tune underneath me doing some comedy.
Yes,
they played September the 11th in the background on a big projector.
Yeah.
And you had to say jokes.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that. It was Stuart Laws and Matt Winning.
Right.
And they Matt Winning. Yeah.
Oh, right.
And they just had like all their friends on.
Yeah.
Because for some reason they just
like
had
a raffle.
This hour.
Yeah.
A raffle. And it was like, I remember, the Hotel Rwanda theme tune. Everybody did like a minute each. And you had to eat something from the roast tray.
I know.
That was just like a, what was it? A microwavable roast from like.
But it was
Tesco.
Cold. It was cold. I had a roast potato because it was the least slimy of all the. I was like, this is just solid carb. Oh my God. Yeah. That's the first time we met.
That is.
And then, what were you doing that year? Were you doing.
Oh.
You were doing a shared show, I think.
I think I was doing the Reserve that year.
So the Comedy Reserve, is that the Pleasance?
Yeah.
So the Comedy Reserve for people that are not comedy geeks.
Or
stand-up
Or stand-ups, yeah.
So the Comedy Reserve is like this really kind of like... it's a really special show to get on. It's like if you're an up-and-coming comedian... Then you share an hour with other good up and coming comedians. Yeah.
It's the Pleasance showcase of new talent.
Yeah.
I think and there so it's like the it's like curated by the Pleasance, I guess, and it's just like if you're a stand up, it's such a sweet deal.
Yeah.
Like
really?
If you're a stand up, I recommend trying to get on the Reserve because it's like it'll be the best Edinburgh you have. You basically just you do nothing. They take care of everything financially and like accommodation and everything.
Oh.
You just have to go and do the show. The shows are tough, I will say that, because you're in this room that's more suited for theater.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a new stand-up, chances are you've been doing like the
clubs.
Open spot circuits. Yeah, the clubs. So it's basically they're taking four club
club trained comics and putting them into a theater space, and it's awkward.
Right.
but then also you'll have lovely shows, and you'll have like, I remember one show we had during that run where the fire alarm went off.
Yeah.
And I was on stage and I had to just kind of like MC the crowd out of the venue through the fire alarm. And it was so weird.
So did you have to do like comedy while not knowing whether people were burning to death?
Exactly. So I just, I remember when it went off and I just, and it was about 2 minutes before somebody came in and let us know what was happening.
Yeah.
So I just had to like make jokes about fire. For like 2 minutes, I was like, oh, well, well.
Then you're like,
maybe we'll burn. Oh, it's been a fun time.
And people are like, it's too soon. It's in the middle of the event.
Exactly. It's literally too soon.
Yeah. How did you... So that was like a good milestone for you then, getting onto the Pleasance Reserve.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice, yeah.
And have you felt like that way about anything else in comedy since then?
No, not at all. No, no.
Good,
no,
good. When I was asking the question, I was like, what the fuck are you out of it? What's your achievement, Tiff?
Go to my website. You can see my full CV.
No, I'm so sorry. What was your first Edinburgh show about? Because I feel like the first one is like the story that everyone wants to tell.
Yeah. It's either the story you want to tell or it's the story you think you have to tell.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I had like a mixture of that.
Okay.
Where I was like, I want to tell this, but I also thought that I needed to tell it in a specific way.
Okay.
Which I now, after doing it, because then I went back and then I hated doing it that way. And then I was like, I'm going to go back next year and do it a different way. But then I went back and did it the same way, but like a different story. And now I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to do it this way again. But I did it. It was very confessional. It was very honest. And it had like a serious part in it where the laughs weren't really. I tried to break it up with as much laughs as possible. But then I had like a part where I do have a bit of a spiel. But then I do have. I break it off later, but then it just made me feel very cringe about myself.
Yeah.
But so the story was like my first show was about, it was called Hyman Maneuver.
That is a great name.
Yeah. I Googled because I was, it's about me losing my virginity as an adult. So I was 25.
Okay.
I was just Googling like, different synonyms for like breaking your hymen,
yeah,
or like losing your virginity, and just went through a list of all of the internet things that I found. So, and that was the one that me, my agent, and the producers could all agree on.
Amazing. It's a very good one. You lost your virginity when you were 25,
yeah,
and were you like, did you? So were you a virgin when you started doing comedy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you kind of aware then that that would probably be a thing that you would talk about in... Because I feel like that with mental illness sometimes. Sometimes I've had like a breakdown since I've become a comedian. Uh-huh. And I'm in the middle of having it, I've been like, oh, I'm definitely going to get some material here. Do you know what I mean? I'm like going through the process, writing down notes.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Because you're like, it's not for nothing then.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. The thing is, I didn't think it out at the time, but now I'm like, as the dude enters me, I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to talk about this on stage. Definitely. I went through because I was really like cagey about it when I was a virgin, and I didn't, I was embarrassed, I think. So I never thought about talking about it.
Okay.
And then when it happened, it was quite, cause a lot of things happened around it as well.
Okay.
And after it, like the guy and I didn't really get on after it and stuff. So it was like, it's weird, but it was like semi-traumatic for me, I think.
Yeah.
And so when I even stopped doing comedy for a bit after it.
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah.
So it was like, I think
that is traumatic.
It's traumatic, yeah. But it was like a huge deal for me. But then I know the people around me at that time probably thought that I was overreacting. So I think when I started doing comedy again, I was like, there's no way that I can't talk about it, or that I can't not talk about it. And it became like a way of, and then when I did my first show, I was like, you know what? I've been so embarrassed by all of these things that happened to me, and felt really bad about it, and felt like it was my fault, that I don't want to feel that way anymore. So I was like, I'm just going to tell everybody about it.
Yeah.
Tell everybody my secrets. And then gain some kind of weird ownership over it.
Yeah, did you feel like a sense of freedom?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hanging out the dirty laundry in a way, yeah.
Yeah, I feel that way about stuff too.
Yeah.
And
your comedy is really honest as well.
Yeah, but sometimes I feel like, sometimes maybe my second show where I did it about like having a breakdown where I pissed into a pint glass and stuff. Just
was that the Hawaii show or was
yeah,
the Warrior?
That was the Hawaii show. Yeah. The Warrior Princess is a very similar theme. I just need to get a psychiatrist.
That's so funny.
I mean, up to my fourth show, the Alison Spittle needs a psychiatrist.
You can just have audience members come up and sit in the chair.
My boyfriend has told me, I was chatting to him yesterday and we were chatting about therapy. And he's like, Alison, you need to stop going on podcasts and talking about rape culture and then asking them not to broadcast it and just get a counselor. And I'm like,
that's hilarious.
Because that's what I do.
Yeah.
I go onto other people's podcasts and I divulge too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I feel better, but then at the end I'm like, please don't broadcast. And it's just them listening to me talk about like assault.
That's so funny.
It's
very horrible. That's so
but
funny.
It's so funny. Yeah, that's the shit I find. Yeah. It's so hard. It's so hard.
Because you find like, because that's like being a comic, that's what we do. Like,
yeah.
And that's what we find funny. But I understand how it can make other people uncomfortable.
I know. And it's totally, yeah, me too. Yeah. And sometimes. So like when I did the second the first show was a write-off and shitty, right? the second show was like the show I wanted, that I just had like, you know, I was like, oh, I'll just talk about this stuff because I feel it's not talked about enough and it'll be fun. But sometimes I would walk off stage and I'd feel bad and I was like, why do I feel bad? And it's because I'm just reliving the same trauma again and again and again. And it kind of like, I had to take a step back and kind of like assess, you know?
See, I think that's what I felt the first year as well, because it was so personal, and then some days it would be fine and I would have a fun time, and other days I would feel so bad, and I figured it out. I was like, I'm just kind of reliving it.
Yeah.
And I feel so vulnerable.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell you. And especially if it's a crowd that you feel like they're not going to
be on
board.
That they don't deserve it.
Yeah, they don't deserve it.
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, I find it really hard because I didn't see your Hyman Maneuver show.
I didn't see your Hyman.
That's fine. Let's just lay our cards right.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't seen any of each other's shows.
Yeah. I was telling you, I saw the trailer of Nowhere Fast.
I know what.
That's what I was thinking.
And you were like, I liked it. And I was like, I was like, yay, a compliment. Yeah. I was like, the trailer was good. But what I found about the show, what we were talking about, like reliving our traumas and giving our traumas out. And I think the first show you do is the one that you kind of have to do. It's almost like lancing a boil and you get that shit out of the way.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's tough. What I was going to say is I would love to do a stand-up show about some situations where I feel people haven't treated me right or nicely.
Yeah.
But I find it so hard to maneuver around. Especially because, like, I do some jokes about this one guy who used to, like, physically assault me all the time, right? And like, I have some people were like, oh, you can't do that. And I'm like, but he did do that. And it's fine. Sorry there, I'm coughing. I'm reliving the trauma.
Allison is curled up in a ball on the floor.
Yes. But it's very hard to talk about situations where people have done you wrong, and you don't want to paint the picture to the audience as well that you are just here to complain or it's your time for revenge.
Exactly. Because
I don't see comedy as a time for revenge, but I do want to talk about stuff that affects me.
Exactly.
I know, and other people's behavior affects me.
Exactly.
How do I do it, Evelyn?
It was weird because when I was doing the Hyman maneuver thing, I was so careful about not painting him as like some kind of villain. I wanted to show like, I wanted it to be as nuanced as possible.
Yeah,
but it's so weird, you know, to have to that you extend that courtesy.
Yes, yeah,
to the people as well.
And you always, I feel like comedians are very empathetic.
Yeah,
and I show an undue amount of empathy to people that hurt me.
Yeah,
like an undue amount. That you, I'm just like constantly making excuses for them. Yeah, and it's fine. Like, but and I do that because it's in my personality, but I also do it because I'm afraid that people might think that I am being petty.
Yeah.
You know, or vengeful or whatever. But I am petty.
And vengeful. Yeah. And it's okay.
I'm going to lean into
Lean in.
Lean in.
Just lean in.
Lean into the pettiness.
Yeah.
Petty in Pink. That's my next show. No.
That's a very good title.
Thank you. And it could be a pink poster. I've already got my...
A ball gown, pink dress.
Yes, I would do that.
Princess dress.
Like, my last Edinburgh show, Warrior Princess, I should have called it Fat Bitch because I was thinking about it. Like, it was actually the last day I did my the Edinburgh show.
Uh-huh.
And I sat there, I was like, the title of this should have been called Fat Bitch because I use it so much.
Oh,
and it's just about getting internet trolled by people and stuff. Just like, it's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so hard. It's so hard being, I don't know, because you are fat too, a comedian, and it's so weird. I was like, you don't know what
do you identify
as?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? But when you try and do jokes as well about being fat or about people's reactions to you being fat, the audience are weird as well.
Yeah.
If anything I want to talk about, I always have to think about how my audience are going to be and what they're going to,
because the default setting is that they're like, oh no, does she feel bad about it? Like,
yeah.
And it's like, it's weird, isn't it? Because it's you can talk about, because when I talk about Chinese, they don't feel sorry.
Yes.
And I've also struggled with like how to talk about how I feel about my body,
yeah,
and my relationship with it, but in a way where I can show them the weakness or the vulnerability.
Yeah.
But also having them not feel sorry.
I know. Because I feel like there's an undue pressure on fat people in industries such as ours.
Yeah.
To be like totally happy with ourselves.
Yeah.
Or we're letting down people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I'm not letting down. I am a person, and
exactly,
I feel the way I feel about whatever I feel.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't put an expectation on me just because I'm fat. Like, I get a lot of praise where they're like, oh, I saw you on television the other day. Good for you. And I'm like, what? Oh, because I left the house being fat. You know what I mean?
That's like, insane.
It's nice. They're being nice. But like, part of me is like, is it just because I'm a comedian that you're praising me? What if I'm a mother still fat? You know what I mean? Someone comes up to me at the school gate and goes, I saw you drop off your kids today. I just want to say good for you. Good for you.
So good.
So you are an inspiration.
Yeah, exactly. You're so brave.
Yeah.
Just existing.
Yeah, I just eat my feelings, please.
Yeah, exactly.
I am mentally ill.
You can do it too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so easy.
It's such an easy pattern of behavior.
And it's quite enjoyable.
It's so soothing.
Yeah. Short term relaxation.
Long term, my knees. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have. A bunch of obesity related stuff. Got gout.
Do you?
Do. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So you've gout.
I had gout flare up once, and then I've had like,
I'm sorry, I was just like, oh, obesity,
yeah,
like it's a Pokemon card.
Oh, I've got them all.
I got the Mewtwo. Yeah.
That's so funny. Oh man, but it's like it's so I've passed 30. I'm 31 now, and also I've passed I think the amount of weight, the cutoff to where I'm okay being overweight, and then also where it's a health issue. So I'm sort of on the cusp of that, and so I like, what is it, gout?
Yeah,
and then
that's the thing in your
arthritis.
Toes.
Yeah, yeah, it's the it's just like buildup of uric acid, and then it gets caught in your feet joint, and it just hurts like a bitch.
Okay, okay.
Like my friend, he gets gout flare ups. He doesn't change his behavior, by the way. So he'll get like flare ups, and then he has to sleep in the tub because it's the only place where it's comfortable for his foot.
Oh my Christ! I don't
it's
want
really
that.
Bad. Oh my God, it's so bad. But like, so it's like, so obesity related arthritis. Fatty liver.
Fatty liver.
Which is really impressive, by the way, because usually that's like an alcoholic's thing.
Oh, that's like a foie gras.
Yeah.
You're making your own.
I'm making my own foie gras. So when the revolution comes, hit me up and you can get really nice liver.
Nice high, yeah. High fat liver. Put it on a Ritz cracker.
Yeah.
So, so the fatty liver, how does that, how did that, was that just a doctor check and he would go, by the way, you got fatty liver as well? Okay, fair enough.
So it's like, it's a, they did a blood test. They're like, oh, your liver values are a bit high. And then I had to go to like a specialist. Yeah, that's like, because that's usually it's like alcoholics get that.
Yeah.
But I've eaten so much crap and because of my weight that my liver's just not getting rid of the fat fast enough, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, if I lose, I have lost the weight and it was fine, but now I gained a little bit of weight back.
Okay.
So I think I don't know. I'm somewhere there.
So did you change your, dietary behavior or what? Because I'm fat because I self-soothe. I'm fat because it's natural. No, yeah. I'm I'd love to be one of those fat people that go, excuse me, I've got a disease.
Yeah.
You know, where someone tweets at me and I'm going, I'll have you know, sir.
Yeah.
Through no fault of my own.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm an innocent. This is drive-by fatness. I was just walking in
the... Yeah. And I do not appreciate that you're shaming me right now.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, some people would treat me and just go, just eat less and walk more. And yeah. I'm like, yes, I know. I know. I do know. Like, as if this person's like, I don't know if she knows the secret to losing weight, but she
I'm
should
gonna tell her.
She should eat less and walk more. Why didn't someone tell me this sooner?
I just make terrible decisions, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's so funny. I was like, oh my God. You know what? This man shouted at me in the street the other day.
No.
It changed my life. Oh, no.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny.
Yeah. It's kind of... it's a definite kind of like I don't have anything yet. But I do want to get health. I'm 29. Oh. So maybe it is a thing where as soon as you I got 6 months of me not giving a shit and then I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Everything comes at once. Yeah,
yeah. It's like as soon as you turn 30 you get all the Henry VIII kind of like diseases.
Which is like a statement to how you've treated yourself.
I know. Oh, well, yeah, I treated myself like a Tudor king.
Yeah, exactly.
I got syphilis. Yeah. I got gout. He did have all the like good diseases.
He did, yeah. I've beheaded 3 women.
That is a disease. Yeah. Misogyny is a disease.
It is a disease.
How long have we been talking?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. We have to 40 minutes. So we've done like
an
hour. Yeah, that's been
cool.
What did you do your second show about? Just so I feel like I didn't.
About uncomfortable subjects.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Right. Okay.
We'll
cool.
That.
We talk about it after the podcast.
Just talking about uncomfortable subjects.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's end it on an uncomfortable silence. Goodbye, Evelyn.
Goodbye, Alison.
Thank you very much to Pritchard and Yor, who gave me two batteries and coffees, which I will pay for. But I won't pay for the batteries. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
That was Evelyn Mock. I've been Alison Spittle. Ah, come here. My play is over, so there's no point telling you about that, but I have a tour. I'm going to be on the 30th of March in Vicar Street. That's the big one. Then the week before, I'm going to be in De Barra's on... I'll tell you now, because I have a map, a calendar in front of me. I'll tell you now. Wait there. 21st, I'm going to be in Clonakilty in De Barra's. And the 22nd, I'm going to be in Coughlin's in Cork. I'm doing two shows. The later show is sold out, but there's a 7:30 show that you still can get tickets for. On the 29th of March, I'm going to be in Glasgow Comedy Festival, and that's going to be great crack. Then on the 4th of April, I'm going to be in the Lazy Dog in Bristol. And then the Landor Theatre on the 5th of April, I'm going to be there, and that's in London somewhere. And then on the 20th of April, I'm going to be doing a show. Alison Spittle makes a show of herself in Mayo. I can't quite remember what town it's in, but it's in the county. So go see that. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Sarah Garvey, who makes the show, Paddy and Alan from Headstuff, who make this happen. Thank you so much to William Conway, who does the artwork. To Bobby Ahern from No Monster Club for the fantastic theme tune. And no one else. That's all I'm thanking. I'll do it in next week's episode, and I'll chat to you soon. Best of luck. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.